Mr. Green? Mr. Green?
Yeah.
You need any help?
Mm-mm.
I just want you to know, I think you're the best ever.
Yeah, sure.
Want my Coke? It's okay, you can have it.
No.
Really, you can have it.
Okay.
A Coke and a smile.
Hannah Stanley, filling in tonight for Dave Plyer, along with the worldly fellow Fred Weintraub, who is sitting in studio with me as well. Joining us now on the phone, author of the book entitled The Coca-Cola Trail, is Larry Jorgensen. Thank you, Larry, for your time tonight. I know it's the middle of the night.
That's all right. Thank you, Anna. Glad to be here.
We are big fans of Coca-Cola around the studio. There are lots of them around here. But what possessed you? I know this product has been around for literally more than 100 years. What possessed you to write a book about it?
Well, we have two very interesting places in Coca-Cola history nearby, and I started out by investigating those two, and I realized there was much more to this than just those two places. My book is called People and Places in the History of Coca-Cola, and we go all the way back to 1894 with some unique stories. And primarily, Hannah, what we try to do with the book is not only the history, but places where the reader can still go and see some of this history. You know, whether it's a Coca-Cola plant that's now something else, or a Coca-Cola museum, or whatever.
It does have a very storied history. I remember growing up, and my mom would say that my great aunt, had been addicted to it because of cocaine. And I was like, well, that's just crazy, Mom. But is that fact or fiction?
That's primarily fiction, but I do know a lot of people that are addicted to it, but it's because it's a fabulous beverage. But that comes from the fact that the original formula for the syrup used coca leaves, which ultimately, if you want to do like the boys in Colombia do, yeah, you could make cocaine, but coca leaves, no. So the formula had coca leaves, and it had the cola nut. That's the key ingredients in the original Coca-Cola formula.
All right. The other thing that I have to check with you, because nobody remembers, Fred Weintraub, who's sitting in studio with me tonight as well, he claims to remember this, but I think he's just being nice. When I was little, my grandmother, who was a nurse, used to, if I had an upset stomach, like every little kid gets all the time, she would go, oh, here, have some Coke syrup. And she would go to this medicine bottle that she had gotten at the pharmacy, and it was what I believe was the syrup from Coca-Cola. Do you remember this?
I have not had personal memory of that, and I think today it would be extremely difficult to buy, although you can. If you go on the internet, you can find it, the Coca-Cola syrup that is used in the bottling of Coca-Cola. I purchased some one time. It comes in a very large bag, and we had it made into Coca-Cola jelly for Christmas, but normally, no, it would not be available per se at a pharmacy. Whether it was in those days, who knows? But I know there are people that do count on Coca-Cola because of the ingredients and the carbonation to give them some relief from stomach problems. Or you can have a Cuba Libre.
Absolutely. It's that, in part, it's such that fizz that sells your stomach when you've got a problem, when you don't feel well.
That's right.
Well, I think it's psychosomatic because I remember having my grandma give me the syrup when I was tiny. So I'm like, oh, that always makes me feel better.
So, Larry, would you consider yourself a Coca-Cola connoisseur?
I'm afraid not. I'm an old news dog who got interested in this story and decided to make a book out of it. I know a lot of Coca-Cola connoisseurs, and I've met some wonderful Coca-Cola people in doing the book. But unfortunately, I am not a connoisseur of Coca-Cola. I like it. It's a good beverage. It's not a must on my list, though.
So as you were writing the book, what were the couple things that absolutely shocked you? You know, business mistakes that Coca-Cola made. They sold something for a dollar that they should have sold for $1 million.
Right, right. That's a fascinating story. Well, you know, Coca-Cola was first bottled the very first time in 1894 in Vicksburg, Mississippi. It was a gentleman by the name of Joe Biedenharn who had a soda fountain, and was getting the syrup for his fountain, and he was also a distributor of the syrup. And out of frustration not being able to get the beverage to people in the country, he decided he would try to bottle it. He did, and Coca-Cola said, yeah, that's nice, but so what, you know. And you're right on the dollar. It was 5 years ago, I mean 5 years later,
okay,
that two attorneys from Chattanooga, a Ben Thomas and a Joe Whitehead, went to Atlanta and convinced the owner of Coca-Cola syrup, who at that time was Asa Candler, that they wanted to bottle Coca-Cola. And he said to them, this is ridiculous. He said, this makes no sense. I sell syrup. And they wore him down to the point where he signed over the rights to bottle Coca-Cola in the United States, every place but Mississippi, for a dollar. And he never collected the dollar. So Mr. Thomas and Mr. Whitehead go back to Chattanooga, and it's, what are we going to do now?
Maybe they needed to go take an MBA class, because clearly they probably didn't make the right business decision. But as you look globally and as you did all this research, it's kind of interesting to just realize how much Coca-Cola, whether you're a fan of the drink, not a fan of the drink, how it's so embedded and threaded in our entire society, from the jingles that Coca-Cola's come up.
I'd like to teach the world to sing. Yeah.
There's not a single person who doesn't know that. And whether you're in a grocery store in London or Yugoslavia or Singapore, you go down the beverage aisle and you see that.
The wave.
You see that logo. You mm-hmm. see that logo. And in many ways, that logo, that drink, that branding, it really does bring us all together.
It does. It has special memories for a lot of people. And the book, I'm very fortunate that I think those memories have come out in people that have wanted to read the book. We have 30 chapters about all sorts of interesting things. I know GN gets down into Indiana, and you've got the story of the bottle starting in Indiana. Why is the bottle green? We have that out of Greencastle, Indiana, and so forth. I mean, it's just Coca-Cola history is all over the country, and the book is a tribute to those independent bottlers that really, they're the ones that made Coca-Cola. It wasn't Atlanta. It was all the bottlers who said, yeah, I'll invest $1,500 in this project, and I have a 50-mile territory. I'm going to make Coca-Cola.
It is fascinating how such a simple decision by one man just to help his people out in the country get to enjoy the same beverage those in town were drinking has really changed so much of our culture, because I can't imagine people walk down the street. We have the cans, we have the bottles. Really, really interesting. Larry Jorgensen, author of The Coca-Cola Trail, People and Places in the History of Coca-Cola. And you can pick that up where finer books are sold. You can go straight to Larry's website, which is thecoca-colatrail.com, and there's other items also for sale. Larry, thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you. I've enjoyed talking with you and brought back good memories of my days in Chicago. Thank you.
Oh, well, we're happy to have you. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Hannah Stanley here on WGN Radio with the worldly fellow who's probably seen Coca-Cola in more countries than I can count. That is Fred Weintraub. He is sitting in with me as well. We'll be back right after this on WGN.